You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, a state capitol reporter brings us up to speed on all the biggest news stories from around Wisconsin this week, including the trial in a voter ID lawsuit.
First, we're gearing up for Memorial Day here on Central Time. It's the unofficial start of summer and of grilling season.
So we brought in an expert on barbecue and grilling for this Food Friday, a man who calls himself the Barbecue Whisperer. He just wrote a book called Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling, and he's here to share grilling tips and techniques.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite meals to make on the grill? What's your favorite way to cook meat outside? What have you grilled already this season? What's on the grill for this weekend? And do you have questions about grilling out? Our guest in his book has already answered, 10, 20 of mine. Call in now at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Meathead Goldwyn joins us now. He's the co-author of the new book, Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. He's also the founder of AmazingRibs.com. Meathead, welcome to Central Time.
Well, I'm glad to be on Food Friday. Hello, Rob and Veronica.
Well, I got to ask you, your motto is, you say, give a man a fish and he'll probably get it stuck to his grill, teach a man to grill, and he'll become a big fish among his family and friends. Why are you such a believer in the power of grilling?
Well, the grill puts a spice on the food that you can't find on your spice rack. There's a flavor that open flame produces, and smoke. Liquid smoke is no substitute. So it's a unique and very seductive flavor. Perhaps it twangs our cords from our caveman days. I don't know. But don't we love to go out back and cook?
I do. Now, I understand you say outdoor cooking is actually harder than indoor cooking. Why is that?
Well, it is because indoors you've got a thermostat on your oven, and it's fairly accurate. Now, you know, the oven goes up to a certain temperature that you set, and then it drops, the flame or the coils go off, and it goes up and down. So it creates this little, what's called a sinusoidal wave. It's a on-off, on-off cycle. But at least it holds roughly around the temperature you set. When you fire up your grill, that dial thermometer on your gas grill is garbage. That's the cheapest thing on the grill. It's the last thing that the buyer acquires for the grill. It's an old technology from the 1800s. This is the digital age. Why don't they have digital thermometers up there? And the dial is in the dome, which is great if you're going to eat the dome, but the food is down on the cooking surface, 6-8 inches below. You need a thermometer with a probe, which will go on the grate next to the meat to know what temperature the meat is feeling.
Well, so that gets us into some of the tools of the trade here. And there's not really just one way to grill. There is charcoal grilling. There's gas grilling. There's different types of heat. Do you subscribe to a particular way to go?
Well, my audience, both in the book and the website, are everybody. I mean, I just talked today to somebody who is in an apartment building and can only cook on a George Foreman-type grill, an electric grill. So I try to test on everything. My deck is about ready to collapse. My wife has laid down the law. One comes in, one's got to go out. But there's just about every device out there, and when we develop recipes, we test them on them all. For things like red meat or things that I really want a good dark sear on, I usually go to charcoal because it gets really hot and makes a great flavor. But for convenience and ease, for quick and easy on a Tuesday evening after work, it's so easy to fire up the gas grill and throw a couple of chicken breasts on there. So I use them both. I have wood pellet grills. They actually burn little wood pellets. They look like rabbit food. I have a big green, I got them all. You don't want to know what's out there.
I want to bring in a caller already, Meathead. David is on the line in Beaver Dam. David, hi.
Hello. Wood pellet grill is the only way to go. The last caller that mentioned he has a wood pellet grill, I don't believe he does, because if he used it, he would know it's more convenient than a gas grill. It's more accurate than a gas. It's more accurate than a charcoal.
David, thanks for bringing that. That was you, of course, Meathead, saying you had all three kinds. Now, I bet you run into this all the time. You're agnostic. You'll use any of these different kind of grills. A lot of people will not. They have their way, and they'll only do it that way. Can we all get along?
It's semi-religious, you know. and it's interesting that caller about the pellet grills. The people who own Traegers, which are a pellet grill brand, and the people who own Big Green Eggs are really, really devoted to their machines. You don't see that level of devotion from other cookers. I don't know why. They're good cookers. They're not the best by any means. Pellet grills are really nice, but they're best as smokers. They're not good at grilling. They don't sear a steak well. I wouldn't buy one if I wanted to make great steaks. But if I want to make ribs, pulled pork, they're wonderful for that sort of thing.
Well, let's get into some of your specific advice here. Now, one thing you want people to do is to have sort of a two-zone setup in terms of the heat. And this is kind of revolutionary to a lot of us. Why
like
so?
Me.
Like Rob.
Well, most of us go out back and particularly guys, you know. It's funny. On the website, our data shows something like 80% of our audience is male. And we don't do anything to pander to that audience. So I don't know why it seems to still be a guy thing. But we guys go out there and we turn all the burners on high, or we get the charcoal roaring and we lay it out across the bottom of the grill and get it as hot as we can get it. And the key to any kind of good cooking, indoors or outdoors, is controlling temperature. As you can indoors, you have a thermostat on your oven. We don't have that outdoors yet. Now, that pellet grills that the gentleman mentioned, they do have thermostats, and that's a real nice feature. But the others don't. Now, the way to control temperature is, if you're using charcoal, is you push all the coals off to one side. Now, some people put them on two sides, but it's much better to push them all off to one side so you have a very hot side and a not hot side. On a gas grill, you'll turn one or two burners off on one side and one or two burners on the other side. So what you have now is you have three forms of heat. You have direct radiant infrared heat coming from the heat source, from the charcoal or the gas. That's really intense heat. Then you have convection heat on the other side, where warm air is circulating, but there's no direct radiant infrared heat under the food. And so it's like in an oven. It's surrounded by warm air, and you have much better control. And then you have conduction heat, where the food is lying on top of the hot metal, and that hot metal conducts heat. So you've got three different kinds of heat at work there, and you have control over it. You can move the food from side to side, or in most cases, it's best to start the food on the indirect heat side, gently warm it, and then at the end, just before you're ready to serve, you move it over direct radiant heat and sear the heck out of it and get a good deep dark crust that way.
Talking to Meathead Goldwyn, we are grilling. He's the author of the new book, Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. Want to get into a recipe we've shared on our Central Time Facebook page and the Central Time website. One of the sauces you have in the book, this sounds great, chocolate chili barbecue sauce. Can you tell us about the recipe and how we should use our barbecue sauce on the grill?
Well, let me talk about the book for just a second. The book is divided in half, more or less. The first half is almost like a textbook. I hope it's more interesting than most textbooks, but it describes how heat works, how smoke works, how fire occurs and how it works, how charcoal is made and so on, meat science, and gives you all the information you need. The second half is recipes, and the recipes try to cover all the barbecue canon. So in the barbecue sauce section, I try to have a recipe for all of the regional styles that go back in history. In South Carolina, there's a mustard-style barbecue sauce that's very popular that came over with the Germans. Kansas City-style sauce is the type that we're most used to. It's the sweet red sauce, kind of like ketchup on steroids. This is something that is more creative that I just kind of came up with once for the fun of it. It's like a classic red Kansas City sauce, but we use chocolate for the sweetener instead of just plain sugar, and then we give it a cut of hot chipotle, or you could use ancho. You can improvise on these, but that's a nice combination. I mean, if you go to a gourmet chocolate shop, you'll often find chocolate and chipotle or chocolate and ancho in chocolate bars. So we did a barbecue sauce with it. It's really fun. It's really nice. If you use a sauce like this, it's got so much going on, you don't even need a spice rub to go underneath it.
Wow. So chocolate chili, and would you normally put spice rub if you weren't using this one? Is that one of your techniques, always use spice rub under the barbecue sauce?
Well, you know, in building a recipe, you often layer flavors. You start with the base food, whether it's meat or asparagus or a vegetable or a potato of some sort. You start with the natural flavor of the product. And I'm not real big on monkeying with natural flavors. I love the taste of turkey. I don't want to inject it with Dr. Pepper. I know people that do. But then you can put a little spice or seasoning on top, and that often amplifies or complements it or brings up flavors that are hidden. So a spice rub or a spice mix is always a nice thing to use. Salt is crucial. Salt turns up the volume on everything. And in meat, salt gets down into the meat, and it actually binds with the protein and helps the protein hold on to moisture. Your other seasonings, like paprika and sugar and garlic and pepper, the molecules are too large. They can't get into meat. But salt is the magic rock. Salt, sodium and chloride, that's all. Very small molecule. And when they get wet, they get electrically charged and they move. So you really want to use salt. And then the last element of this orchestra of flavors that we're building might be a sauce. So that's typical, for example, of, say, ribs. Start with the pork ribs, put down a rub, put down some salt, and at the end of the cooking, that's when you add the sauce, when you're almost done, because if you put a sweet sauce on early in the cooking process, you're going to burn it.
Wow, well, that sounds delicious. So we're going to get into a little bit more when we come back, talking to Meathead Goldwyn, co-author of the new book, Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling, getting his advice for cooking outside this summer.
Taking your calls, too, at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question, a how-to question about cooking on the grill? Meathead probably has an answer. And what's your favorite grilling recipe? What are you cooking this weekend? And what do you cook on? Are you a partisan of charcoal or wood pellet or gas? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post and find that chocolate chili barbecue sauce recipe on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our discussion now on this Food Friday with Meathead Goldwyn. His new book is Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling.
And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What barbecue tricks do you use when you're cooking on the grill? Do you have any specific secrets or preferences to the type of grill? And do you have a favorite recipe that every winter you just can't wait to haul out the grill and make that grilled recipe? Let us know at 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we will go back to our callers. We've got Paul on the line in Delafield. Paul, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What do you want to ask about, Paul?
Well, I'm waiting for the rain to clear up so I can grill. But I'm wondering when to sear and when not to sear. I like a pre-sear. Do you ever pre-sear the meat and then cook it slower?
Meathead, to sear or not to sear? That is the question from Paul.
Yeah, and he embedded in there, he's asking a more complicated and an interesting, and it shows his level of sophistication. Searing is always good with red meats and whenever you can, because searing is the changing of the proteins, the molecules on the surface, from pale and boring to dark and rich and laden with flavor. It's a reaction called the Maillard reaction. And if there's any carbohydrates or sugar in there, you'll get caramelization also. So searing and darkening the surface of meats or even vegetables, almost always desirable. Now, the question I heard in the background in there, or buried in there, was about when to sear. And this is interesting. Now, meat, you have to understand, is 70% or so of water. So it doesn't heat up rapidly. It's kind of slow. It's insulated. So when you cook on a grill, the heat, the hot air, cooks the outside of the meat. But the hot air doesn't cook the inside of the meat. The outside of the meat cooks the inside of the meat. The outside of the meat collects heat, holds it, builds it up, and slowly conducts it. This is conduction again, pushes it down into the center of the meat. So the outside of the meat is going to be hotter than the center of the meat. And so if you cook over very hot, radiant heat, You'll get very dark, great sear exterior, but you'll also get a layer of brown right below that, and then a layer of tan right below that, and then a layer of pink right below that. And if you're cooking a steak and you like it medium rare, you might get a layer of medium rare in the center. So you have this rainbow effect. The way to defeat that is to cook it first over the indirect heat, the convection heat, on the other side where the flame isn't, and gently warm it. When you do that, it heats evenly throughout. But the problem is you don't have a dark crust. So here's the trick. You get yourself a digital thermometer. This is essential to modern cooking. First of all, food is too expensive to waste, and it's too expensive, and people are too expensive to waste. People can get sick from undercooked chicken. So you want to have a $30 will buy you a good digital thermometer, and it'll give you an instant read, 5 seconds precision. You'll heat the meat on the indirect side to about 120 degrees, and then when it gets there, you move it over the direct hot searing red flame part, and lift the lid. So all the energy is coming from the underside and not from above, and now you build your sear. You flip it often, so you sear, and then as you flip, the heat will radiate out into the atmosphere rather than down into the meat. And then you take it up to about 130 or 135, which is medium rare, and that's the temperature at which meat is most tender and most juicy.
All right, a dissertation and
but he wanted that answer. I could tell that was what was in his question. Now, let me jump in for one more second. For a really skinny steak, say under an inch, 3/4 inch, or a flank steak or a skirt steak, you got to cook that over direct heat all the way. Otherwise, you won't get a dark sear, and it'll be overcooked in the center. But for a good juicy 1.25-inch, 1.5-inch steak, start indirect, then finish direct.
Talking to Meathead Goldwyn right now, co-author of the book Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling, also the founder of AmazingRibs.com. Thanks a lot, Paul, and good luck on that grilling. We're going to go next to Curtis in Madison. Curtis, hi.
Hi, great advice. Thank you very much. I have a question. I really like to grill chicken thighs over charcoal, and I've forgotten where I learned this trick, but I parboil them first, and I think it adds the moisture. And it helps cook it, the blood out from around the bone. I'm interested in his opinion about that strategy.
All right. Chicken thighs, should he parboil them, Meathead?
That's an effective technique. Now, when you do that, if you look at the water after you've parboiled, it's very cloudy and dark. And that's flavor that you've extracted from the meat. That's because water is a solvent. And that flavor can't get back in. You're not going to miss it terribly because you're going to have spices and maybe even a sauce on there. And I understand your concern about getting the blood away from the bone. Here's the secret. Chickens today go from hatched to the grocery store shelf from 0 to 3.5 pounds in 7 weeks. That's unbelievable. It didn't used to be that way. By the time they get ready to sell in the grocery store at 7.5 weeks old, the bones haven't completely calcified. All the blood has been removed from the chicken in the slaughtering process, but there's still a tint of blood in the marrow of the bone, and because the bone has not got a strong calcium layer around it, it'll sometimes discolor the meat next to the bone. Blood is of itself not dangerous, not harmful, nothing bad tasting, and it's really not bloody down in there. What you want to do is digital thermometer. 160 to 165 degrees is your done and safe temperature. Consumer Reports a couple of years ago did a research project where they found out of 300 chicken breasts they tested, almost 90%, I think it was more than 90%, had pathogenic bacteria. You can't risk cooking chicken too under. And simmering in water doesn't always add water because the chicken is full of water. You're not going to get any more water in there. It's saturated. There's no air pockets in there. There's no place for the water to go. So you're not really making it juicier, and you are extracting flavor. I'd recommend, and this is the way I do it, I love chicken thighs. I prefer dark meat. I'll start them on the indirect side. So if you were cooking over charcoal, push all your charcoal to one side, start them over the indirect side, bring them up to about 150 degrees with a digital thermometer, and then move them over to the hot side, skin side down. That'll crisp the skin, take it up to 160. You're going to be perfectly safe, really rich, intense flavors.
Thanks a lot for that call, Curtis. Just a brief bit of time left, Meathead. What is going to be on your grill this Memorial Day weekend?
I just got a pizza oven shipped to me from Italy, and I'm a pizza freak. I am married an Italian-American, and I love grilling pizzas, and I do it on my Weber kettle. I do it on my gas grills, and this is a genuine wood-burning stone pizza oven, and I can't wait to fire it up.
All right, Meathead, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much, and happy grilling, everybody.
That was Meathead Goldwyn, founder of AmazingRibs.com. He joined us to talk about his new cookbook, Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling.
And don't forget, we have that recipe for the chocolate chili barbecue sauce. You can find that over on the Central Time Facebook page, and you can keep on letting us know what you're going to be grilling this Memorial Day weekend, too.
And do you feel inspired by all the grilling tips from Meathead? A lot of ones. We got to have him back.
You're speechless. You're gesturing at the book.
I am.
Speechless.
I'm pointing at the book. I've learned so much that two heat approach. I've got to get a thermometer. I just overcook meat to be on the safe side. This could change my. And we didn't even get to it. A lot of
veggies.
We didn't get
to smoking too, which I'm motivated to get a smoker after looking at this book.
Yeah, and check this out. Also, grilled eggplant turned into baba ganoush. So yeah, we'll maybe have him back to give us some more grilling tips.